Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What? El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
He's with us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. You know the drill. You hear that music. It is time for the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Hello, Michael.
Hey,
we were talking about the Major League Baseball draft. I actually watched some of this last night for close to an hour, just trying to soak it in and just see what it – I've never truly paid attention to the broadcast and how they present it and everything. So I sat down and watched it last night. And we hear about baseball making efforts to try to, you know, catch up to football in different aspects. This is one area where it'll never, ever, ever, ever happen. I mean,
You're correct.
It can't happen because you don't know who any of these players are. They are faceless. They are anonymous. And unless you are the biggest baseball geek in the world, you'll know who some of the college players are. But half of these kids are high school players out of Horseheads, New York. And you're going, I've never heard of Horseheads. I don't know where this high school is. I've never heard of this kid. But he's the latest pick for the Mariners or the Phillies or whatever. It's just, it'll be impossible for it to become an event.
And making it worse is, in football and basketball, the players who are selected are expected to play the next season. In the baseball, these guys are consigned to the minor leagues to places that make Horsehead, New York look like a metropolis, and therefore we don't have any say in or any knowledge of when they're necessarily going to be up and play, if they are. I did a thing for Athlon's baseball guide this year. I do it every year. We look 10 years back at the draft. The 2009 draft was grim. You had Strasburg and you had Trout, but Trout didn't go to like 27th or something. And then in between was a bunch of dreck. So you're right. Nobody knows who the players are. They're not going to play right away, and they may never get to the majors. At least the NBA, if you're a bust in the NBA, at least you spend 3 years in the NBA as a bust. Same thing pretty much with football.
Speaking of the NBA, what do you think of the Raptors' chances this week?
It all comes down. I mean, I got to find out what the medical report is. I hate to say it. If Klay Thompson can play, the Raptors will still lose. If Klay Thompson is severely compromised by his hammy, and you can give him electronic stim and ice it up and heat and whatever you want to do, but if it's still tweaked a little bit and he can't move around like he usually does and get the lift off of his shot, then they're in trouble. But I still watch Toronto play and still say, when it's time to win, who besides Kawhi Leonard can you trust to score the basketball?
How do you find that player? When I look at the Warriors, it looks like at every single position, they've got talent, they've got a veteran presence. I mean, they've won all these championships, so they've obviously got experience, but that team is just so well constructed. Is that just impossible to duplicate? I mean, the Raptors have a nice team, but like you're saying, where else do you put the ball?
Well, and the thing is, too, it's so well constructed because three-fifths of its core, or three-quarters of its core, came through the draft. Curry was drafted, Thompson was drafted, and Green was drafted. And the article in Sports Illustrated this week about Green is revelatory because it basically says, look, during the 82-game schedule, he's not somebody who has a game that really translates well to that time because it's all about skill. But come the playoffs, his numbers go up because it's a type of game that is better suited for his personality. He makes great decisions on offense about when to shoot, when to not shoot. He hustles like crazy back to both ends of the court, and he is always willing to play great defense, and his defensive instincts are so amazing. So when you have someone like that you get in the second round, plus you get Curry, who you got early on, and some people are saying, oh, he's too small, he's too light, he came from Davidson. Then you've got something, and that makes Kevin Durant want to come there. So if you're Toronto and you want to get better or win and find those other guys, you have to keep Kawhi Leonard. You have to keep finding good value late in the draft, like Fred VanVleet. And then you have to be able to say, we need another free agent to join us who can make a real difference, especially late in the game.
You hit the nail on the head, though. It starts with the draft because the Warriors were an absolute terrible franchise. I mean, absolutely awful for more than a decade, and now look at what they've done. And they did it, as you pointed out, 75% of it is good drafting.
Yeah, and what's really interesting, too, is, and Green says it in the article, there are 82-game players and there are 16-game players. And that means there's guys who are great during the regular season when, you know, a mid-February game against the Magic really doesn't mean much. And so you get 27 points, yahoo. And then there are guys who, for those 16 games, meaning you got to win four best-of-seven series in order to win the NBA title, they're the ones that you need. And there are precious few of them. I always remember an NBA general manager telling me one time when I was asking him about a certain player who was in the league who was scoring a lot but on a bad team. He said, look, even if a team loses 113-96, someone still has to score the 96. Let's see what he can do when he's on the team that's scoring 113 and when they're doing it in May and June.
You know, we've been talking about Steph Curry and just his ridiculous ability and his range just seems limitless and effortless. His shot is effortless. To me, he might be the best pure shooter I've ever seen, and that's with all due respect to Ray Allen and Reggie Miller, and if you want to just keep going back to Chuck Person and go back to his dad, Del Curry. I mean, it's just, you know, we were talking about it yesterday with Dwayne Casey, who basically agreed. I mean, he may be the best shooter this league's ever seen, and I understand his career is far from over. But where would you put him? Where would you put him just in terms of just a pure shooter compared to anybody you've ever seen?
He's at the top. And for me to say that about somebody who's playing now with my disdain for the instant classic mentality and the knighting of players who have had one or two good seasons, if we're just talking pure shot, squeeze it off fast and get it in the basket from long range, there's nobody that's I would say that he's distancing himself from everybody else. And that is no disrespect to Reggie Miller and Del Curry and the Rifleman and who else did you throw in there? Ray Allen. Those guys could shoot, but this guy can shoot. My dad used to say, there's people who have money and then there's real money. You know, so people have money fly first class. People who have real money own the plane. So
you know,
he can really shoot.
You just reminded me of that line from Coming to America when they realized who Eddie Murphy really is. He said, when I say he's got his own money, I mean he's got his own money. And there's a picture of his face on the money.
Right, exactly. So when you say that there are great shooters, yeah, there are great shooters. But when it comes to the best, I mean, he does stuff like catch the ball at full speed and just throw it up. It's almost as if he's just goofing around to try to show, look, I can do this. And not only am I allowed, it's going in most of the time.
Hey,
so I think he is clearly the best shooter of all time.
Where does Drake rank among all time NBA celebrity fans? Yeah, whatever you want to.
He's
put
behind
it.
Jack Nicholson is still number one.
You're right.
Spike Lee is number two. I would put Drake. He's Canadian. Come on. Are we talking NBA fans? Or are we
he seems
like
much.
Other fans?
He seems much more vocal and animated. Where Nicholson kind of just kicks back and he watches. Where Drake's he's massaging
Spike
the
Lee
coach.
Was in the game.
Spike
right?
Lee's talking smack with Reggie Miller. Those guys are much more involved.
Yeah. Are we just talking NBA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think I would go Nicholson, Spike Lee. I don't like what he does.
What about Jimmy Buffett?
Who is he like?
Miami.
The Heat?
Yeah, please. I mean, he's probably baked and he doesn't even know what's going on. throw Billy Crystal in there, the Clippers.
For the Clippers.
He's a big fan. Diane Cannon. I'm putting Diane Cannon ahead of all of them. All right? Because she was a big Lakers fan, even though she didn't have the same seats that Jack did. Was much more easy. It was much easier on the eyes when the camera went on her than when it went on Jack, I'm sure.
Hey, the ratings are way down for the NBA. Is that a LeBron thing? Is that a nothing?
I think it's the fact that watching the games is very difficult. It's boring basketball. It really is.
Really?
And I think. Oh, come on! It's you can't drive because of the defenses. It's a 3-point shooting game. I think that the league has tremendous drama in the off season. And that's what everybody, I'll tell you what, from July 1st to July 31st, it's going to be a lot more exciting than it is now. Because where's Kyrie going? Where's Kawhi going? Where's KD going? Is DeMarcus Cousins going to sign? You know, is Houston going to trade its whole team? from the end of the season until the beginning of the training camp will be far more exciting than the rest of the season. From the 70s, the 60s, 70s, I didn't see any of the 60s. I just remember when Willis Reed broke my little 8-year-old heart when he came out and hit those two jumpers in 70. But 70s into the 80s, even in the early 90s with Jordan, I didn't miss a minute of a final series. And I can take or leave these because I just don't find the play as good I saw a video. Steph Curry took a pass after a rebound and took 4 steps and then dribbled. Really, and nothing was called. He just started running. Oh, I got a dribble. I forgot.
He looked like a football. Running back.
Yeah, exactly. it's so much about the three-pointer.
Yeah.
And so much about space and all that, that the game, you've lost some of the identity of the game because it's really just a shootout.
I agree with what you're saying about the quality of the basketball from the 70s, 80s, 90s, but what is not exciting about made three-pointers?
It's because it's all that we have now.
Okay.
Right? It's sort of like I love Häagen-Dazs caramel cone ice cream. Okay, love it. Put M&Ms on it. I put Twix on it. It's like a diabetes in a bowl, right? I can't do it all the time. All right? It's like when Dr. J played for the Sixers, it was tremendous because not only was he going to dunk, but he was going to go under the basket and shoot. His passes when he first came in 76 were so out of nowhere that they whistled past his teammates' heads because they weren't expecting them. Now it's, okay, pass it around, open three.
Right.
Woohoo! Raise your hands and jump up and down.
Hey, Michael, let me bring you to baseball. The Mariners are just in an absolute free fall right now. We saw.
Wow, I just looked at the standings before I came on to do a little homework.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that happened fast.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, they were in second. Now they're in last, and it's just so. And they're trading Jay Bruce to the Phillies and paying like 85% of his money?
Yeah. Yeah, all true.
Wow.
Yeah, and keep in mind, at one point they were the best team in baseball this year. 13-2.
Like, what, March 20th or something? But I mean, this is unprecedented. I mean, they're making the Marlins look involved.
Did you see the play from last night's game, though? They had runners on first and third. A dribbler hit to the shortstop, or a little more than a dribbler, but ball hit to the shortstop, runners on first and third, there's one out. He fires the ball home. The catcher was gone, had vacated, and was running up the first baseline.
Hey, look, give the catcher mad props for having the old-fashioned fundamentals of backing up first base on the throw.
Except not with a runner on third.
I know. I'm trying to find a silver lining here.
This is going to be
epic. I'm looking right now to see if they're worse than the Orioles. Not yet. Worse
but
than
they're
the
playing at 25% clip since they were 13-2. That's a 122 loss pace.
That's unbelievable.
Now,
you're
a veteran of this. I mean, the Phillies have gone through that. You talked about it.
Yes.
We're to the point, I think, in what we've been telling listeners, is you just start watching the young guys. You start paying attention to the guys that are supposed to be part of your future, right? You can't get hung up on wins and losses because it's just going to eat you alive. So it's about, these young guys that they're calling up that are going to be part of the future, and that's what you take solace in if they're having success. Is that How did you handle it? How did you handle it in Philadelphia when it was just a train wreck?
I'm an addict, okay? I followed the Phillies since 69 when they were god awful. And I was the kid, and I'm not exaggerating. I used in the early 70s when they were going to finish in last by 30 to 40 games, I was betting the kids in my neighborhood that they were going to win the World Series. My father heard about it, and he said, "Why isn't there a line of kids around his house trying to get your money, you idiot?" So I just love the Phillies, okay? In all forms, in all shapes, at all times. I've been a season ticket holder since the mid-90s with friends. So that's the team that I support. I mean, Eagles, when they're bad, I can always find something else. There's other football. The Sixers, I've lost this enthusiasm for them ever since they did that tank. And the Flyers, it's like, please, mediocrity since 1975. It should be their motto. So I just watch the team because I love them. But I'm not going to give your people any illusions that things this is going to end soon and end well. You need stars to win in every sport. And unless those guys coming up are like hit like 900 in AAA, you're just right now, there a lot of them are just placeholders until they get better players. The Phillies won their last playoff thing berth in 2011. All right, we're in 2019 and they haven't been back to the playoffs. It's better. They're in first place. They were in first place for a lot of last year before they just completely fell apart and went 15-30 in their last 45 games. But I can't promise you that this is going to have an ending in 3 or 4 or 5 years. This could be a decade long misery march to the next spring training.
Well, you mentioned stars, and I mean, another team we've been talking about is in our own division here with the Angels. What would you tell an Angel fan about wasting the career of Mike Trout?
Well, if I'm an Angel fan, that's the only reason I'm an Angel fan, right? I want to go see Ohtani hit, and I want to see Mike Trout play every night because he's so good. And so, I mean, I don't care. I mean, if I'm Mike Trout, I'm upset that they're wasting my career, although he just signed a 800-year contract, so he's not going anywhere. So it's like Mike Trout has decided he would like to waste his career in sunny Southern California. If you're an Angels fan, buy as many tickets as you can to see this guy play because he's the best player in baseball by far. And when it's over, when he's not going to hit 755 home runs, but he sure as heck it could end up with a WAR of like 350.
What's Jay Bruce's role going to be in Philadelphia?
Probably he's going to strike out a lot, not get on base, and they're going to pray that he hits a couple home runs from the left side in pinch hit situations.
That sounds about right.
An awful trade for both sides. You guys got to pay all of his contract just about, and you get a fourth round draft pick from us who is not been listed on even the top 100 list in the organization. The Phillies get a guy who was hitting like .212 with a .282 on base percentage, who's old and washed up, and he's taking a roster spot from somebody else. So this was you've heard of a win-win? This is a lose-lose.
Yeah, but you're getting him at the top of his game. It took him a long time to get over .200. So he's peaking right
great.
Now.
He's on a real rise. That's great. Meanwhile, Odubel Herrera is going to, the center fielder that they've signed for like 6 years. He's going to probably not play again for the team because A, he beat up his girlfriend. B, he stinks. Remember the Glenn Foley, Michael Bradley axis where the better you are, the more you can get away with. So they'll get rid of him. So now they're going to bring up Roman Quinn, who gets hurt when he looks in the mirror. So I mean, this is just not good. Jay Bruce, Roman Quinn, please.
You guys have lost 5 in a row, yet you're still in first place. That's...
Well, it's not going. If they lose again tonight, Atlanta's only about a half game back. The Mets are the Mets and the Nationals are lurking. And if they continue to get the kind of awful pitching they've been getting, and I mean those your world champion Philadelphia Phillies, it's going to go south fast. Now half their bullpen, meaning all their good guys, are on the disabled list. Plus, their starting pitching is about as reliable as the cable company. So this is just, it's ridiculous.
Is their manager still nuts?
I heard the other, now listen to this. I heard from somebody who knows this is the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. But I was talking to someone who's good friends with a high-ranking Phillies official who said, Kepler wears eyeliner.
What? He wears eyeliner.
I haven't had a chance to take a look, and they're playing out west past my bedtime. So I want to see if they get a shot of him and see if he's got his eyes get a little popping a little bit with some with some Chanel number 5 eyeliner or whatever, Maybelline or whatever it is.
Wow.
I don't think he's putting on like the CoverGirl lash enhancer or something like that. He might have a little bit underneath.
He's got the guy liner going.
If he's wearing it, I can't tell. I'm just Google imaging him here.
I mean, you're an expert on this, but I who's the most famous guy who wore eyeliner?
Derek Carr is accused of wearing it, but I don't think he is.
What's that?
I said Derek Carr is accused of wearing eyeliner, but I don't think he does.
Little Alex from the Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he had the eyelash on the one eye.
A little Bill Maloko plus. That's what we need.
Hey, how are people feeling about Bryce Harper out there? He's hitting .243, but he's got an on-base percentage of .355, and he's leading the team in terms of driving in runs.
Yeah, well, he's still the golden child. Everybody loves him. It's not a situation where people are booing him yet. I mean, if anybody boos, it's generally because they're being a little sarcastic. There are still some people out there who are not pleased with what he's getting. One of them is my soon-to-be 92-year-old mother, She calls him the million-dollar man, and she says, how'd the million-dollar man do? Oh, he didn't get any hits. He stinks. So there's still some people out there that are not happy with what he's getting paid and the return on it, but he's still got the honeymoon going on pretty strongly here.
Roger Goodell brought up what did he say? That was a
you
great
don't need
reaction.
To finish the sentence.
Wants to cut out two preseason games. What do you think he's driving at? Just adding two more regular season games?
Did he say two?
I think it's a gambit to try. I've always thought that the NFL's ultimate goal is to go to 18 games with two byes and have the Super Bowl in on Washington President's Weekend. I think that's what they want. Cause that way they can, most of the country's off on Monday, except those of us who work for a living. And you can then have a lot bigger Super Bowl party. And it takes you, there's that dead period between free agency and the end of the season where the NFL isn't the most important thing in the whole wide world. So, I think that what he's going to do, and he's right. I mean, that fourth preseason game is a total joke. I don't know of any team that plays anybody worth its salt. And the first preseason game is pretty much a joke, too, because the starters play like one series. So between scrimmages with other teams and just regular practices, I think that you can certainly get to go to two preseason games. But they're never going to get rid of, a season ticket that makes you buy 10 games. Whether it's a preseason, whether it's four preseason games and 16, or whether it's two and 18, they're still going to do it. Now, this is going to require some serious, serious concessions to the Players Association. And in speaking with somebody, a high-ranking NFL official the other day, a team official, it could well be legalization of marijuana in terms of drug testing.
Mm. Wow.
Well, I would say it's about time.
You take a look at the difference between that and, heavily addictive opioids for pain control.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to smoke a little ganja and make the pain go away, it's a heck of a lot better than getting them, messed up on opioids.
Yeah, but there's just something that in the eyes of the common man makes it more palatable when it comes from a doctor's prescription pad.
Yeah, of course, and these doctors' prescription pads might as well be, death warrants.
Yeah,
because there's, the addiction rate is so high, so I think that could well be the one of the concessions. If they want to go to that many more games, then the players are going to say no more drug testing for marijuana.
He is El Hombre, Michael Bradley, with us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. You can follow him on Twitter, at Daily Hombre. At Daily Hombre is where you find Michael on Twitter. Michael, great stuff as always. We'll do it again next week.
So long, suckers.
There you go.
Click.
Michael Bradley breaking it down, and we'll see if the NFL gives on that. As willing as they seem to be to have doctors prescribe incredibly strong addictive substances, as he was just talking about, the idea that somehow the marijuana thing's such a taboo for the players is just mindless.
But doctors could just as easily prescribe that.
They could.
In the states where
but they don't. Well, I was going to say, in certain areas, they don't need to.
Understood. But, look, if these guys are injured, when doctors are writing opioid prescriptions, at the very least, they're under a doctor's care. I don't think that what they want is for marijuana testing to stop and then just say, okay, just go off and buy it on your own and good luck. I think they still want to have doctors overseeing what they're doing.
Meanwhile, this bud's for you. Go out and drink yourself silly if you'd like.
But nobody's telling them to do that for pain relief.
I don't think they care that much if it's a way to get the games that they want. If that's the concession, because I don't really believe they have to make much of a concession at all, because I don't believe the players will fight them. With any, Clay, I talked to Clayton about it, and he says, well, they'll do a lockout then. I says, well, how long will the players stay out? We'll see. It might be a concession that they're willing to do to get their two more regular season games.
All right, coming up, Jay Glazer doesn't seem to think very much of Russell Wilson. We'll discuss why next in the Halftime Show with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for the Halftime Show.
The half is not over.
Presented by VenueKings.com.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The Halftime Show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Bob Gross and Tom.
It is the Halftime Show here with Bob Gross and Tom. It happens at this time every single day if you're new to the program. Can't join us right at noon. You miss the biggest topics. We retrace our steps and then get to a couple of stories we didn't have time to get to, like this one, where Jay Glazer apparently is not a huge fan of Russell Wilson. Do we have some audio from...
We have audio of Colin Cowherd talking about it. Yeah. Ashley, you have that? Go ahead.
And I think he's now officially banned from our show because this is one of his answers. Somebody asked him about, you have the keys to an NFL franchise. How many quarterbacks are you taking over Baker Mayfield? Give me your top five list in order. And he said, listen, I'm going to put Brady up there, and then Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson. But honestly, I think I'd put Baker right in the middle of that list, even over Russell Wilson. The hell?
It's one of the few times I agree with Colin Cowherd.
Agreed.
Can we just slow down on Mayfield and the Browns for a moment?
Well, just Mayfield in particular. I mean, jeez. One year.
What is it about him where people are willing to go that extra
mile and make excuses?
Not excuses, but to put him ahead of everybody.
He had a good year.
I know, but Russell Wilson had a good year.
Russell Wilson had a better year last year.
Yeah, we talked about
35 touchdowns, 7 picks.
The numbers are between Baker Mayfield and Eli Manning were pretty equivalent in terms of quarterback rating. Eli threw for more yards. I mean,
just compare him to Russell.
He's being talked about like he was Mahomes. I get 50 touchdowns. I mean, it was a ridiculous season. The hype is warranted. Mayfield was representative, and the Browns have been so bad that a 7-8-1 season appears in the minds of others like, man, they were a step away from the playoffs. I mean, and maybe they will be, but just allow it to happen. You know, he's been crowned the king. You put him ahead of, and that's his opinion. He's entitled to his opinion. But, man, of 1 year where he played pretty decently.
He had a good rookie season. That's all he's had.
I just don't understand why certain guys get the benefit of the doubt and more, and other guys just get overlooked. I mean, look, at this
point. It's always been that way,
though.
Part of it's being out here.
You know what, though? The Seattle Seahawks, to me, are a national team.
But when they became a national team, it was because of their defense first.
But who's their biggest star?
It's Russell Wilson now. But you can argue that he wasn't their biggest star when Marshawn Lynch was here.
Richard Sherman.
When Richard Sherman was here. He wasn't their loudest star. So he got overlooked to a degree.
I mean, he's still selling tons and tons of jerseys. I wonder how the jersey sales are going between those two.
That's what really matters.
That's what matters.
I don't get it. And Mayfield may end up being great. I'd absolutely allow
sure
for
he
it.
Might,
but it's one season where he played pretty well compared to a guy who's won a Super Bowl, been back to another Super Bowl, has been a Pro Bowler, who had a much higher quarterback rating, more touchdown passes, and he's done it year in, year out, did it with one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen, led the league in touchdown passes. And you're going to say, well, this kid who's got 1 year on his belt and he's under 500, but I'd take him over him? Okay.
Don't get it.
Is that, and I heard, I don't know if it was Brock or Salk, one of the two, saying, he works out with a lot of these players. They're clients of
Glazer does.
Yes.
Yes.
I wonder is Mayfield one of his guys? And Russell certainly not.
Baker Mayfield, by the way, has the 7th highest selling jersey.
Who's 1 through 6?
1 is Brady, 2 is Khalil Mack, 3 is Patrick Mahomes, 4 is Ezekiel Elliott, 5 is Saquon Barkley, 6 is Drew Brees.
Wow.
8 is Carson Wentz, 9 is Dak Prescott, 10 is Juju Smith-Schuster.
See, that proves it. He's not Mayfield's not better than Russell Wilson.
All right, story number two. Mariners didn't commit an error per se last night as far as the box score went. You didn't see an error in the box score, but they came up with one of the most cringeworthy plays you're going to see in a long time.
That's a nice way of putting it, Bobby.
Oh,
It was beer league softball.
If you were one of the tens of people in attendance last night or sitting in front of your TV, you saw runners on first and third with one out, ball hit to the shortstop. He picks up the ball, rolling to his right. Couldn't throw across his body to second base.
And it was a slow, grounder.
Fairly so slow, yeah.
He had no chance to double play.
No, so he's thrown across his body. He picks up the ball, immediately fires home with a runner on third base and one out. Play at home. Problem is, catcher wasn't at home. Narvaez had vacated, running up the first baseline, forgetting there's a runner on third.
Ashley, let's start with the radio highlight. Let's do that one first.
Pitch to Gurriel. Swinging a ground ball to Dylan Moore. Low stab. He throws home. The shortstop throws home. There's nobody at the plate. Narvaez was halfway up the first baseline, anticipating a throw to first to back it up. Omar was not even in the hitter's circle. Moore's throw went to the backstop. Nobody was there to receive it. Bregman scores from third, and it's 4-2 Houston.
The throw, by the way, was perfect, and it beat him by about four or five steps.
By the way, like you, Tom, I watched that play over and over and over. Did you notice LeBlanc's reaction?
No.
He turned around and looked at Moore. It was palms up, like, what are you doing? Like, he was mad at him.
Well, you know, in the moment, there was obviously a lot of confusion. Yeah. Maybe Wade did. Look, I'm not going to worry about what he's
thinking. He kept him out there for a little bit, like, seriously?
Where are you going, son?
And you saw Seager kind of pat him on the butt like, it's okay, kid.
Yeah, it's okay. I did the right thing.
Yeah, Scott Servais said as much after the game.
Yeah, no reason to think that the catcher wouldn't be there.
With a runner on third base.
And less than two outs.
Can we hear Sims and Blowers, their reaction?
Ground ball. Dylan Moore comes home. Nobody home! Wow.
I'm not sure I've seen that before.
And then just the capper, Ashley, if we can get Scott Servais' thoughts on that particular play after the game.
Omar, he vacated home plate and too soon, obviously. It was a strange play. I've actually had that play happen to me as a catcher, believe it or not. Yes, same exact thing. And I learned a lesson, and I think Omar did tonight too. But you know, when the ball's hit, the first thing you're thinking is it's a double play. And Dylan actually made the right read. You know, he probably wasn't going to be able to turn a double play on that. He made a very athletic throw to the plate, and Omar just vacated too early. You got to make sure he's committed to going to second before you trail the play to go back it up.
Boy, Narvaez owes Servais one for going out there and say, hey, yeah, that happened to me once. We all learn our lesson.
Yep.
I mean,
hopefully he learned his lesson.
Yeah, Servais stepped in front of that bullet. I hope that the clubhouse takes notice.
He did.
Yeah. All right, so there's a bit of what we discussed to open the show. Happens at that time every day. It's always followed with answers to your questions. All we need are your questions. Text them in. 710-710 is the Coors Light text line. Any topic or subject is fair. Text in whatever you'd like. Have an opinion already? Coming your way next with Bob Gross and Tom, live from Seahawks headquarters on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Have an Opinion Already on the Bob Gross and Tom Show. Three loudmouths, three questions, and one giant tub of hand sanitizer. Right, Bob? Let's get it on.
Let's get it on.
Nope. Try again.
Let's get it on!
Question one.
What fact is common knowledge to people who work in your field but almost unknown to the rest of the population?
That,
easy.
It seems to be that most of these players aren't the way you perceive them in commercials and interviews and things. Fans have a sense of knowing these guys. I feel like, oh, he would never do that, or he'd never say something like that, or you guys just don't understand him, you know what I mean? And
a public face, in other words.
Yeah, I think they tend to rely on what they see in interviews, what they see on the field, and say, I know that guy. And I'm always, like, when people will text in, oh, I tell my son you should look up to this guy, and I'm like, you got to be careful, man, because you don't know these guys. You don't really know them when you prop them up as a role model. And you think, ah, oh, he's a great guy, and he would never do this, that, or the other. And
I would say that's a big one.
They're not the way you perceive them to be. Some are great guys. A lot of them are great guys.
I'm not saying they're bad guys.
No.
But
they're flawed. They're human beings. They're human beings that are flawed like the rest of us.
Well, more than that, this is a job where you have a public face.
Yeah. And you have a public persona.
And you have a private life, too.
Yep.
In the old days, you could probably get away with looking up to somebody because stuff didn't come out as easy as it does.
There was no internet. There was no cell phone cameras. There was no TMZ. There was
no reporters kind of conspired with players to keep things secret.
Nice little arrangement they had.
Yeah, they did.
Next.
Question two.
We were just talking about this yesterday off the air. What was your favorite subject in high school, and what were your overall grades like?
My grades were terrible. My favorite subject was probably history.
Yeah, I had terrible grades, too.
What do you define terrible?
I needed to get D's in my final two classes in order to graduate.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you a D student?
No, I was generally a C student. I graduated when I started my senior year. I was 16.
So. I needed to actually take seven classes, second half of remember, at least in my high school, you had first semester, second semester.
Yeah.
I had to take seven classes and average a 3.5 to graduate.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
That's tough. That'd be tough on me now.
It'd be impossible now. But I mean,
it'd probably
just
be more of a problem now. I don't have the focus.
Yeah, do you think you could pass high school now?
Oh, I think
I'm not
rough.
Sure I
some
could.
Some things definitely not.
Reading some of those books or going through some of the math, some of the algebra, I'd be like, I couldn't do it.
Well, that stuff hasn't changed.
I went in and begged for passing grades in math.
Please help me.
What can I do?
You've got to help me.
I'll do
what
anything.
Can I do besides getting the answers right?
I can't come back
I
another year.
I can't get them right.
If you bring me back another year, I'm going to fail it again.
Oh, yeah. I did just enough to get by.
What do
but
they?
I loved history.
Yeah, history is great. Do they eventually pass you if you just can't get it?
Sometimes.
Or fail you? They just say, hey, don't come back next year.
Depends on the teacher.
Some kids come back. I didn't want to be one of those kids. But to me, and like we talked about yesterday off the air, it was always about the teacher. If I really liked the teacher, I did well in that class. Yeah. There were times I got great grades in math and science and things I wasn't particularly interested in, but loved the teacher. So you would make an earnest effort to do well. You look forward to it versus a teacher you hated. You didn't do well, or at least I didn't.
I fell asleep in biology class first period every single day. It was the most boring class of all time.
Did you get a good grade?
No.
Did you pass?
I passed. I mean, D's passing. D
yes.
minus. No, I passed, but barely.
Never fell asleep in class.
Oh,
at least
man.
I had that going for me. But I cut class all the time.
Go home, go to sleep.
Just hung out.
Let's see here. I did a brake job on my teacher's car in order to graduate from high school.
I hear you.
Awesome. Next.
Question three.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how soul-sucking is this season on Scott's service?
It's getting higher and higher. It's probably was a 5. Now, it's probably coming into the season, he knew it would be rough, so he was probably thinking of 4 out of the gate.
But
it's been ratcheted up with the way they've lost, with the plays that are being made. You can hear it in his voice.
Well, they've used, 20 pitchers, too?
Yeah, well, and the other night, he basically said, you were playing the cut. This is bad baseball.
Yeah.
It's bad baseball. Like, he's just kind of tired of seeing what he's seeing. So I think it's been ratcheted up to probably a nice 8.
He does have the manager's demeanor down pat, though. Like,
he
we
does.
Were talking about in the last segment there. Taking the bullet for Narvaez on just an awful play because he happened to be a catcher himself.
Yeah. Bob can relate to this. Can you imagine just for a second if Pinella was here?
Oh my goodness!
What would he have said?
He would have exploded so many times on everyone around him.
They'd be shell shocked.
Well, but on reporters, on media, it would have been terrifying. Would have been absolutely terrifying. I can't imagine it.
Would a manager get criticized today for hanging his player out to dry? Or would we look at it like, you know what, that's what this team needs?
I think fans look at it one way, but I think players are different.
Yeah, you don't want to lose. Look, Scott knows he needs to do something to keep that clubhouse together.
Right.
And hanging
right.
his catcher out to dry. His catcher is probably supposed to be here
what
for
good
a while.
What good
not the
it,
answer.
What good does it do you?
Yeah, it's probably a fragile place as it is right now. This is not going well. And everybody is taking their turns at making mistakes. So
right.
I don't know that you're going to jump all over any one guy because you could point to the guy sitting right next to him going, and you? Oh, and you back there laughing.
But, boy, it's got to be frustrating.
The losing is the fault of Omar Narvaez.
If not for him, this is a winning situation.
What with all the classic game shows coming back on TV.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
Well,
why are
all of them coming back? Which ones, are coming, which ones are coming back?
Match Game.
When are they on?
They're on primetime.
Oh, during the week?
Alec Baldwin is the host of Match Game on, like, Wednesday nights. I'm trying to remember. There are two or three others that are back, too.
What's the one Snoop does?
That's Joker's Wild.
Wild.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah,
I've said that before.
He's got an interesting little take on that.
Right, but that's not a reboot, is it?
Sure.
Joker's Wild
Jack
was?
Jack Barry was the original host
of
that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
They all are. I'm surprised that they're coming back, though.
What about classic concentration? They bring that one back?
They haven't brought that one
back.
That
was my favorite.
I haven't heard of that.
I love concentration.
It was the one where they had, like, a whole bunch of doors, and you had to, like, it was kind of like you had to match them, right?
Yep.
Like, behind them was a prize, like a Toyota Corolla.
Okay.
And you had to find the other one and then match them together. Like, it was like, remember the memory game?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Kind of like that.
I don't think I ever saw that.
Huh. You could win yourself a hutch.
Didn't they redo Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Didn't they?
That's on. That's still on, I think.
But it went away and then came back, right? Everything's a reboot. Movies, game shows.
Yep.
It's all a reboot.
Was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire when Regis Philbin was hosting it? Was it a reboot then?
No.
Sure. Yes.
It was?
It was?
I think it's a reboot from the 50s.
I mean, it's not all that innovative a concept. He's just asking questions.
No.
But the whole Lifeline and all that stuff, I thought it was original.
I thought it was new.
I'm not that dialed into game show history.
I'm not that dialed in either.
Well, I am.
They bring back the $64,000 question, but who cares about $64,000
anymore? Is it $20,000 pyramid?
Well, they kept upping the amount, though.
Is that still going, or did that go away and then
went away
back?
And came back? They put him in primetime, which is really weird. And like I said, Alec Baldwin hosting Match Game.
I could see him doing that. That works.
Hmm. All right.
Brett Summers. She's still alive.
Charles Nelson Reilly.
Is the Gong Show going? Did they reboot that?
They have not rebooted that.
I love the Gong Show.
CIA agent Chuck Barris.
That was a heck of a show.
That was interesting. Yeah.
It was unique.
We're supposed to have Shaquille Griffin like right around the corner.
All right.
So be ready.
We're going to get ready right now. Shaquille Griffin is scheduled to join us as they'll be wrapping up practice for the day. He'll step into the little room with us here shortly. It is Bob Gross and Tom live from Seahawks headquarters on 710 ESPN Seattle.